sad news for Ukraine this week as fighting intensifies around the Donbas region, and Vladimir Putin again warns the conflict could go nuclear if things don't go his way. Ed Blakely is a former Washington insider now living in Sydney, Australia. My name is author and freelance journalist Sean Britton. Find us each and every week wherever you find good podcasts at US of Ed, as well as on Facebook and Twitter. Latest on Ukraine, and it's not looking good for Ukrainians as the Russians intensify efforts around the Donbas region. This is in spite of an injection of weaponry, aircraft and aircraft parts into Ukraine by Western nations. What's the latest, Ed?
Well, I think that's all true, and you have to understand that now the Russians are backing themselves by bombing everywhere to keep the Ukrainians from sending maximum force to the east as they did to the north. I'm not sure. I think this is kind of an even battle. Remember, this is still the Ukrainians' territory. It's not the Russians' territory. Second, the Russian military has been in the field now for, 4 months, and they're totally demoralized. They don't want to fight anymore. If this doesn't end pretty quick, I think the desertions are going to outnumber the number of troops in the field. The third thing is, at some point, Russia will not have the money to replace men or materials. And I don't think that day is very far off. Clearly, the United States and the Allies can keep scaling up the materials they're sending the Ukrainians, and indirectly sending them even more manpower. There are probably a couple of thousand Americans there now, and Poles and others are joining the Ukrainians. So they're getting fresh blood. The Russians aren't. So I think this is still up in the air. There's only one thing that would signal at least a treaty, and that is connecting the Donbass with Crimea. And that could be done by agreement. It doesn't have to be done by a scorched earth policy. Unfortunately, now the Russians have done so much damage in world opinion, they have a lose-lose on their hand.
Well, speaking of scorched earth, I mean, we mentioned a few weeks ago that the Russian presence on the ground seemed a little underwhelming, just, you know, based off Russia's kind of reputation, the many years of military spending that's gone into military equipment and military in Russia. But of course, there is the ultimate trump card, I suppose you might say. Putin sent a bit of a warning this week with the test launch of an intercontinental ballistic missile named the Satan II, which is about as subtle as you might expect. Ed, we've expressed concerns previously that Putin will take the conflict nuclear if that's what he feels he needs to do to maintain his own individual position. Any thoughts at current?
Well, I think this sword rattling he's doing will go so far. What would it do you if you launch a nuclear weapon of any kind and the West invades? You lose. What they've shown is they have an army that can't hold ground. And how many weapons would you have that kept them at bay? Not very many. So I think he really has to win in the next month. Then he might do what you're suggesting. But I also think there are people in the background in Russia who are looking for a new prince.
The Biden government, on top of aid packages and supplying weapons, pledged a month ago now to take in some 100,000 refugees fleeing the conflict in Ukraine. But it's been criticized as too slow this week, with no expedited processes in place, meaning processing refugees into the States could take years. And we've seen what kind of a disaster in places like Syria, it can be with refugee camps kind of left in limbo for years. So what's going on there, Ed?
Well, there are a couple of things here. Let's remember that the last president destroyed the intake system. So intaking immigrants is not a simple matter of them showing up and getting a green card. There's a whole processing effort that has to go on, which was dismantled. The second thing is, where are you going to put them? We certainly don't want camps around the United States. So the processing system for those who have relatives in the United States seems to be going pretty well. But for those who don't, the U.S. doesn't have a lot of spare capacity there. So that's a problem. The third thing here is why you're letting in white immigrants, you're telling brown immigrants they cannot achieve citizenship and they can't stay in the United States. So this is a conundrum the U.S. has to face. And I anticipate U.S. will take in 100,000, but it will take time.
Mm. I mean, as you say, the racial issues do play in here. We've seen Syria left in limbo for years, but then this outpouring of concern when it came to Ukraine, the it could happen here aspect of seeing Ukrainians fleeing for their lives as opposed to a bunch of brown people fleeing for their lives.
Right.
And, you know, you sort of mentioned the case a few years back here in Australia where our own immigration, I can't remember the position he was in at the time, but sort of was very concerned about the plight of white South African farmers as opposed to anybody else who might apply for refugee status.
That was Dutton.
Yeah, that was Dutton.
Hero of our times. So I think this is a dilemma, but this is not an awful dilemma. The United States benefits from this kind of immigration. Russia has no immigration. Where are they going to find soldiers?
Some better news this week. Biden has restored some key environmental protections, reversing decisions by the Trump administration that cut so-called green tape when it came to assessing the environmental damage of installing highways, pipelines, other projects, and dismissed indirect climate damage. Ed, how does this fit amongst Biden's environmental and climate policies of late?
These are important, but remember, as we said several months ago, this is restoring what was. Mm-hmm. It's not moving on to what needs to be done. Mm. And climate change inaction in the past is already overtaking us in terms of the damage it's doing. So we're not back to zero yet.
The Solomon Islands, as we spoke about a couple of weeks ago, they've officially signed the security pact with China that we were speaking on then, giving China a potentially very important strategic foothold in the South Pacific, one that concerns security experts in the States and here in Australia. Ed, like I say, I mean, we should break this one down more thoroughly at some point, but the immediate implications. What are the immediate implications here?
Well, it is an embarrassment. We have not been... 3 years ago, we said we have to pay more attention to these islands. We still haven't done it. And I'm talking about Australia and secondarily the United States. It's clearly not something Trump was interested in at all, but everyone else was hitting the drum saying we've got to do something. And we have a government, several governments in the islands that are not exactly hallmarks of democracy. So they don't mind cuddling up to the Chinese because the Chinese run a democracy, something like the one they'd like to run. Mm. And lastly, these guys see this as leverage against us. They want more aid. This is the best way to get it. What they don't realize, and Africans understand, the Chinese extract a whole lot for their gifts.
Yeah, I imagine there's a few islands right there feeling like the prettiest girl at the ball. They've got the Chinese sort of snuggling up to them on one side, and then the United States or Australia coming to them with sort of, what can I do for you? What can I do for you on the other?
That's right. But this is a terrible game because sooner or later you get in a crossfire and you're the loser.
Do you see, as I've sort of seen a couple of people say, implications for Taiwan specifically in this? Because a few have said this provides a nice little buffer for the Chinese if the United States wanted to interfere with them invading or doing anything in Taiwan.
I'm sure the Chinese have thought of this. They can encircle Taiwan using this strategy. The Taiwanese are scared to death. They've just taken a new order of jets from the United States and are going through military drills. Oh, yeah. This is not an if. It's just a when.
Well, what's going on with Republicans this week? I've avoided talking about Marjorie Taylor Greene. For those unfamiliar with her, she's a representative from Georgia who I think, on top of inheriting Donald Trump's extreme attention-seeking skills, I genuinely think she might honestly be mentally ill in some way. I genuinely do think that. A federal judge this week ruled that a group of Georgia voters can proceed with legal efforts seeking to disqualify her from running for re-election due to her role in the U.S. Capitol attack. Ed, any thoughts on this one?
That's more good news for her. The more she's under attack, the more her people come to her. She's not afraid of these attacks. She just wants more of them. There is no Republican Party anymore. There's a Trump Party. Republicans are gone, dead, dusted.
In all honesty, Ed, I mean, you and I have sort of talked about this, generally speaking, and I've seen a lot of people talking about it as well, you know, especially on those videos you see of people kind of having public meltdowns and the like. Mental illness has really taken root in a lot of places. And America, this kind of despair and division that was already there, really exacerbated by the last couple of years. I do think sincerely, Marjorie Taylor Greene, she may not be an aberration. She may rather instead be a rather good representative for part of the American population.
Agreed. Need I say more?
And just a couple of things before I let you go, Ed. Firstly, Joe Biden has reportedly reaffirmed to former President Barack Obama this week that he will be running again for the presidency in 2024. This is looking like a potential rematch between him and Trump, unless something is done about disqualifying Trump. But regardless of Biden's opponents, for the Democrats, who else have they actually got at this stage yet? I mean, God forbid, if something were to happen that would keep Joe Biden from running, who else have they got?
Well, I think we have to start looking at governors. At this point, we keep looking at members of the House and Senate. Adam Schiffer would be good. He's in the House. How he play on the East Coast, I'm not sure. But we're going to have to look at people like Gavin Newsom, the governor of California. I think governors will be it. We lost the governor of New York. But I think we're going to have to look for governors who have national appeal. Haven't got one in mind. But that's where we have to go.
And Ed, the election campaign here in Australia has been about as underwhelming as I was anticipating. Nothing too exciting. The only thing that really gets a response from me is just how low the Murdoch media will go in service of trying to get the coalition re-elected. I shouldn't be surprised. It does feel like every day is a new low on that front. But any thoughts? Any thoughts on the campaign?
Well, the thoughts are this is a very bad moment for us. No matter who wins, Australia is weak in the eyes of the world and the eyes of Australians. In a time when the economy is looking good, but underneath is not very good, as our climate change issues are rising with floods, and soon there'll be fires. and even earthquakes. We need good, strong, confident, competent leadership. We don't have it. At least the president of the United States, and it looks like the president of Germany and the president of Ukraine are acting presidential.
Ed and I will be back to discuss all the latest goings on next week. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss a thing. US of Ed, wherever you find good podcasts. And check us out on Facebook and Twitter at US of Ed.